Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A hard-fought win, and Steve would praise the guys, and Kevin would start microanalyzing.
Yeah, I don't think we played that well.
No, I think we didn't play well. We could have been better. We hold ourselves a higher standard. And then I think the peak example, when Tim Kawakami with The Athletic was relaying to Kevin Durant about Steve Kerr, and he was frustrated after a loss that they didn't play with enough intensity. In his words, he wanted the guys to be angrier, playing with an edge. And Kevin Durant was making a sarcastic dig and saying, I thought we moved off of joy. It's not anger now. And obviously that was a clear shot at Steve's philosophy of wanting that culture of joy. And I think that misrepresented what Steve's whole thing is all about. His culture of joy is having a positive work environment. As far as the offense goes, it's about, you know, getting everyone involved and having ball movement. And where Steve is talking about him wanting to play with anger and an edge, that goes more into the effort, the defense. He wants that intensity. He wants kind of that good balance of both, right? And so what does all that mean? My sense talking to Kevin this past year is he had seemed at odds with Steve Kerr's offense at times. I have to stress at times, where Kevin was always on board with the idea that the number one option is to get Steph Curry an open shot and Klay Thompson an open shot. Kevin Durant had made the comments himself, Steph Curry is our system. Where Kevin Durant would find, you know, some element of disagreement is, when is ball movement the right option to make? He wants to make the right basketball play. He is a scorer, but he also wants to be efficient. So he's not this guy that, hey, I want to get my numbers, I want to get my shots up. But I think there are times when he would take exception to when the offense is breaking down. It's a solution really to pass the ball to a role player versus passing to him, and he can do his thing in ISO. A lot of times he thought he's the better option, understandably so.
I'm Kevin Durant. Y'all know who I am.
There you go. But that's a good transition to, you know, there was some commentary of how he felt about Steph Curry, and he felt, you know, there was this push-pull of him not being the face of the franchise. I talked with Kevin a lot about this issue last year and this year. He wanted Steph Curry and thought Steph Curry deserved to be the face of the franchise. That's one of the reasons why he signed up to be the Warriors. He didn't want to have that responsibility, and he thinks Steph Curry deserves that. And one of the things that he talked to me about earlier this season, he said he thought it was a huge misconception that he is offended and resentful of living in Steph's shadow. He is very happy for anything that Steph does because of his respect for him as a player and his respect for him as a teammate, that when he was being recruited as a free agent, Steph went out of his way to say, look, I'm welcoming you here. I will adjust my role however it takes because of how good of a player you are. And he also felt very empowered and encouraged that when Kevin Durant was voted Finals MVP, and I got some of this grief well because I was one of the voters. I voted Kevin Durant Finals MVP last year when he won his second title. There were a lot of Steph Curry Warrior fans that were upset with the votes and thought that Kevin shouldn't have got it. And he was sensitive to that. And before it could even become a thing, Steph Curry went to him in the locker room after they won the title, congratulated him, and said, you deserve this. I'm happy for you. Don't worry about that I didn't win it. And that made him feel relieved. So there is no animosity, push-pull against Steph Curry at all.
And if you remember Game 4 in Cleveland, I mean, there were stretches of that game when the Warriors had it under control where it was almost as if Kevin Durant was trying to get Stephen Curry shots to get him, you know, to have one of those 20-point quarters that might maybe flip the vote. I'm not saying that was definitely what was going on, but it felt a little like that in the arena in the moment.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. There were, in fairness, some plays where it looked like, hey, Kevin Durant's trying to have his moment. But I think also in fairness to that series, he was playing really well. Like, if I had to microanalyze it, the reason why I voted for Kevin Durant Finals MVP was that Game 3 performance.
Sure.
He played out of his mind. He had that dagger three. Both Steph Curry and Klay Thompson did not play their best game. where another game, Steph Curry played really well. Much was made of Kevin Durant missing that box out after the George Hill missed free throws, and he was saved to an extent. He was saved because J.R. Smith did not know time and score, and to this day has no reason why he did the things he did to make it into an overtime that the Warriors ultimately sneaked away with game one. Steph Curry also had those 9 threes in game two, but for me, Kevin Durant still had more rebounds. He was more efficient, and that game three performance still tilted it over the scale. But to Steph's credit, as much as he's a competitor, of course he'd want to win finals MVP. It was never a thing that infected his mindset, and it was never a thing that affected how he views Kevin Durant, so much that he went out of his way to give Kevin both public and private support. And in Kevin's mind, he never felt undermined, threatened, resentful that this was always going to be Steph's team because of what he's meant to the organization.
The Chilton Autobody text line, Mark, we've had a lot of texts to this extent, and I know I mentioned it just a couple of minutes ago and kind of how I threw the last question to you. The 619 weighs in. KD doesn't need to give a thank you, but it feels a bit odd he hasn't. It wouldn't take that much effort. People bought the jersey, cheered him on. Disappointing. I think there's a certain set of Warriors fans that are a little hurt, I think, just at that. Hey, thanks for the time. It's cool you're moving on. That's your right. But, people want to think that there was maybe a connection that might not have totally been there.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, especially in today's social media, when there's silence, people fill in the narratives for you, right? And I think it's unfair to speculate, okay, because he hasn't said these things, all of a sudden Kevin thinks this, this, and this specifically about the Warriors.
Right, but that's unfair.
But I think it is fair. Why can't Kevin just accomplish the bare minimum and saying, hey, thank you for my time winning the championships with the Warriors. Thank the team, whatever, the organization for a good run. I wish everyone the best. That's what the Warriors did. And I know talking to the Warriors, they're very sensitive to the fact that they did not want to be the Oklahoma City Thunder when he left them, where there was all this stuff coming out about how they felt about him and how they felt blindsided and, oh, how did teammates think of the whole cupcake stuff.
And they also did the equivalent of, giving Kai Bowman number 35. Warriors are giving Kai Bowman number 35.
Right. Inevitably, there's going to be things that come out that might not be perfect. But the Warriors as an organization, they did not want to put on any facade that all of a sudden they're going to leak all the things that made them feel resentful about Kevin. So the early signs that they have sticking true to their word, Joe Lacob and Bob Myers having public statements, not questioning Kevin's decision at all to leave, and just focusing on the positive for what he accomplished with the Warriors and wishing him well. Joe Lacob saying no one's ever going to wear number 35, so there's not going to be a training camp invitee like OKC had that's wearing his jersey. At some point, I think when Kevin Durant ultimately retires from his NBA career, they're going to hang his jersey in the Chase Center rafters. And they had that tribute video on their Instagram page showing the highlights there. So the Warriors have done their part. And, yeah, I think it's fair to question, why can't you do the bare minimum of just thanking them for your time of what you've accomplished?
888-957-9570. We'll roll on here. It's Warriors This Week. Mark Medina joining me, John Dickinson, here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
KD is cool. You know, we came in together. We was the same draft and everything, so I know him for a while. But he could get a little timid a little bit with the media. You know, if you could let him get to him, get a little soft sometimes. But, you know, he's still KD, one of the best players ever.
That was Nick Young on the Dame and Bruce show earlier this week as part of the celebrity call-in contest. Damon Bruce giving away $1,000 this past week each day and a $5,000 grand prize as listeners tried to get celebrities to call in, and the biggest celebrity of the day would win $1,000, and the biggest of the week, somebody took home $5,000 yesterday.
Yeah.
And Nick Young, Mark, who I know you know very well from your time with the Lakers,
yes,
and obviously
many
the Warriors.
Many entertaining moments with Nick Young.
Nick Young, he was one of the guys that called in on Damon's show this week. And he weighed in on an impromptu interview, weighed in thoughts on Kevin Durant. He had some thoughts on Steve Kerr. And that he also had some thoughts on his lot as what type of celebrity he is.
There's no bigger celebrity than me, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean,
unless it's Jesus. Jesus, man, you know.
Is Nick Young going to turn water into wine? My favorite Nick Young moment, this is when I was covering with the Lakers. He hit a game winner over against San Antonio, and this was like a game where he didn't give it to Kobe, who Brian
sure.
usually passes or takes those shots.
Yeah.
And I asked him what was going through his mind when he took that shot. And he's like, well, he was thinking about the new nickname that he gave himself, which was IDM. It stands for I Don't Miss. Who gives themselves their own nickname, JD? Nick Young does.
Exactly. There were some other good ones, some Warriors ties. Don Nelson called in. Nelly. He called in, and he had some choice words for Ray Ratto.
Is Ray Ratto there?
He yep. certainly is. What do I have to deny?
Are you still fat?
Oh, I'm immense. I'm shaped like Uruguay. Are you still high?
And then I was sharing this with you before the show, and you said, well, what did Ray say? And Ray said exactly the line
well,
that you
Nelly
came
say?
Up with.
Yes, he is high. He's high right now.
And then here's more Nelly on Ray.
Hey, Ray, go on a diet.
I'll tell you what. I'll lose weight if I see a box from you in the next couple of weeks.
Hey, if you smoke some Nelly Kush, you'll get the hungries right away.
Love Nelly.
My favorite moment, he was at one of the games last year, because, you know, the final games at Oracle, they're bringing in all these luminaries, and he was asked such an open-ended question, he and some of the We Believe guys. He's like, what have you been doing in your free time? And he's just like, I've been smoking a lot of pot. And Steven Jackson's sitting right next to him. He lifts his arms up. He's cheering as if he just
greatest
hit a game winner.
Greatest coach ever. Greatest coach ever. Well, Nick Young had some comments regarding Steve Kerr along those lines.
Yeah.
As well. We'll get to that maybe coming up at some point. Let's keep it moving on the phone lines. We've got a couple of guys that want to squawk with us here. 888-957-9570. Khaled in Clayton. Khaled, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Good morning, JD and Mark. How you guys doing?
Good. Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks. You know, I want to touch on, people saying that, you know, KD is going to be a forever Warrior. And, you know, I take a little exception with that. As much as I love KD, whenever he would sign those one-and-ones, it would always make me leery of what his commitment to the team was. You know, and it's kind of like that girl that you really want to fall in love with, but she's non-committal and you're trying to guard yourself from, falling too far for her, you know, because you know that she might break your heart. That's kind of the way I see the fan base, because he kept saying, you know, you hear these rumors from Perkins and everyone else. He didn't really feel the love from the fan base that Steph got. Well, Steph is fully committed to the organization. He's never seemed non-committal. Those one-and-ones never really allowed the fan base to really feel like he was fully attached to us or fully committed to us for us to be able to completely commit ourselves to him. And as much as we appreciate and love what he did, the way he kind of went about the contract situations, and look, I'm not going to question the man in regards to how he's going to do his money, but, you know, or handle his business, and I'm not upset at him for leaving. But at the same time, I'm not going to commit myself full of heart and mind to a person that's not showing the same level of commitment that he wants from us. So the way I kind of see KD's time with us is I appreciate it. I love the 3 years, but I can't ever really look at him as being a forever Warrior because he kind of was a mercenary for 3 years, and I appreciate what he did for us. I appreciate the wins. I appreciate the finals MVP, but it's a, hey, you know, appreciate you. good luck where you're at, but you're never going to be in that lore of, you know, the Steph Currys, the Mullins, the rest of the guys that really committed themselves to the organization and deserve to be in the rafters. That's at least my opinion.
Thanks, Khaled. Appreciate the call. I mean, I think there's a certain set of Warriors fans that feel that way.
Yeah, I think he captured what a lot of Warrior fans feel, and Kevin is very well aware of that distinction, and he's the first to acknowledge it, that it's different than what it's like for Draymond and Klay and Steph, because they're there from the beginning, they're homegrown, they're long-term committed. And I think the interesting thing is there's no question him signing one-year deals had a bunch of uncertainty, but I think this year was unique in particular because the first 2 years when he agreed one-year deals, it was under always the caveat of he actually, you know, to his credit, took less money to help the Warriors round out their roster. I mean, him taking a pay cut helped the Warriors re-sign guys like Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston and get Nick Young as a free agent. And last summer, when he did that, it freed them up to get DeMarcus Cousins, but it was very clear that the end game was to give himself flexibility because when he had those one-year deals before, he said it was always, hey, it's my way of giving thanks to the Warriors, helping them out from a business standpoint. I'm coming back. And he would say that publicly. He'd say that privately. But as soon as he did that 1+1 last summer and he said, well, you know, I want to keep my options open, you can't help but know there's a different shift in tone. And that's, you know, today's NBA. I mean, LeBron James set that precedent when he went to Cleveland and he's doing those 1+1s where he feels that's the ultimate leverage in keeping ownership accountable. And I think here with the Warriors, it's different because with Cleveland, like, they were always seen as a hot mess from a Dan Gilbert ownership standpoint, even if they had a good front office in David Griffin. Because Dan Gilbert was never seen as the best owner in sports, you would understand why LeBron would want to have that as leverage and to keep them honest. But here, the Warriors got Kevin Durant because they were a well-run organization. They had the culture. They had the winning. They also benefited from the fact that the cap spike happened when Kevin Durant was a free agent, so they could afford him. But him having that leverage and that flexibility really spoke to, hey, he wants to be that guy that can be that journeyman if he wants to. And LeBron kind of set that precedent for different reasons, but it's a model that a lot of NBA stars have followed since then.
A lot of folks agreeing with Khaled's call. Also, the Chilton Auto Body text line taking me to task a little bit.
Oh!
Not a certain set of Warriors fans, JD. A large percentage feel the way Khaled expressed.
Yeah.
Take a poll and you'll see. Where do you think that percentage is at?
You know, it's very hard for me to know the percentage because I feel like a lot of times Twitter and email comments, that's not reflective of the real world, right? I know being at Oracle, it's not like they cheered any differently for players, but you could hear the volume. I'm just contradicting myself here, right? You could hear that everyone was positive toward everyone, but Steph Curry got MVP chance. In the middle of last season, you would start hearing both of them getting MVP chance. So it wasn't like they viewed Kevin negatively, per se. It was a positive thing, but they viewed
just
the other guys differently.
Just
and that's,
differently.
That's not a knock on Kevin. It's just the reality of the situation. Draymond's circumstances are different. So is Klay. So is Steph, because they were drafted here, and they were here from day one. And I don't think you can really hold anyone against it. I think where Kevin takes exception to that narrative is where all of a sudden his legacy is being diminished because of it. Like, at the end of the day, the Warriors lost in 2016 to Cleveland, and they felt, hey, to give ourselves a better shot at winning the title next season, let's do the ultimate Trump move. Let's get Kevin Durant. And I will say this.
It worked.
They won two titles. And I don't want to say they would have lost without Kevin Durant, but it wouldn't have been as much of a certainty if Kevin was not on that roster for their 2017 and 2018 finals. And there are going to be a scenario that they wouldn't have won the finals or they wouldn't have even gotten there if Kevin Durant wasn't on that team. And that's where I think Kevin takes exception to the people that make those comments that, oh, well, he just was hopping on the bandwagon, had it on easy street. He actually views it the opposite way, because the Warriors had a much easier ride because he wound up being there for them.
Let's get to Will in Berkeley. Will, you're up here on 95.7 The Game, Warriors this week. JD and Mark Medina of the Bay Area News Group. Hey, Will.
Happy Saturday, guys.
What's up, man?
Hey, you know, I'm going to take a little different analogy on the Kevin Durant thing. I worked at a job for about 10 years, and 8 years into it was amazing, and I felt like I was kind of the big man on campus. But at one point, there was other people coming into the organization, and I started feeling sort of squeezed out, and it felt like familiarity breeds contempt, you know. And at some point, when I found another job, I was still at the same job, and I was like sort of in the backfield. I was sort of playing this whole thing. And the analogy comes from when you watch Kevin Durant at those playoff games, he was in the back. He wasn't sitting on the bench. He wasn't hanging with the fellas. He was in the back. And so I looked at my wife and I said, wow, that's like me my last year at my company. I was not connecting with my, you know, colleagues. I wasn't, you know, connecting at all. And it just felt the same kind of energy. He was done. You know, and once you're done at a job, you're kind of like, I don't care anymore.
Thanks for the call, Will.
Yeah, interesting point here. And I want to clarify two things. Like, your larger point is very astute, where there were times during the season where he seemed distant, certainly after the Draymond Green incident, but just random shoot-arounds on the road. You could see he's sitting by himself looking at his phone while other guys are, you know, talking with each other. But I think specifically in the playoffs, him being on the bench, you do have to keep in mind that a lot of these times he has, with him having an injury, he's in the trainer's room getting treatment. And you can say, oh, well, you know, DeMarcus Cousins was on the bench, Klay Thompson was on the bench, Kevon Looney was on the bench. But every guy has their unique injuries, and Kevin's was considered more serious, where he needs to be in the training room, number one. And number two, at least from my own reporting, a lot of the guys seemed to say, or not seemed to say, they said that behind the scenes, he had a large presence during the playoffs, where he was being a part of film sessions, talking to the guys, joking with them, that sort of thing. But I think the larger point that you're making is valid, that there were times when he was healthy during a normal practice or shoot around that sometimes he was more distant than you would see some of the other guys be.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Do you see a day where 35 is hanging from the rafters at Chase Center? Is that a foregone conclusion? I know Joe Lacob stopped short of that in the statement that he made, saying that nobody would wear 35, but there is a distinction to be made there between that and it's definitely going to be hanging from the rafters. The other factor in play here is Kevin Durant still a relatively young guy in the middle of his prime. He's got some years to play before you start talking about retiring jerseys.
Right. Yeah. My sense is that's the expectation. Like, the Warriors stopped short of guaranteeing something. But when I was pressing on, people behind the scenes were saying, yeah, expect us at some point that we'll retire his jersey. But what they're doing is they're going to wait until whenever he retires. And I think the reason why I think they're more forthcoming about explicitly saying Andre Iguodala will be up in the rafters is that there's a sense that maybe after this contract or some point in the near future, his career is going to come to an end. Kevin Durant's in his prime right now.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, Iguodala could be retired a year from now, and
right. You
could be planning for that ceremony November of 2019, if you
right.
want, or I'm sorry, 2020, if you
right.
wanted to.
And with Kevin, I mean, there's questions about his Achilles, but and his own thought. I mean, he had been on record last year. I remember he told Chris Haynes that he was considering retiring at 35, but he quickly walked that back and said he thought otherwise. But there's a feeling around the NBA that he could basically retire whenever he wants, and even when accounting for an Achilles injury, he could play, you know, up until his late 30s because of how good he is and how well people think his game's going to evolve through father time because it's so fundamentally sound. He has a height advantage. He doesn't have to rely on any power, athleticism, because that lethal pull-up jumper or that post-up or that three, like, those are things that age well through the latter part of your career.
888-957-9570. Warriors this week until 1 o'clock. John Dickinson and Mark Medina. Mark, of course, Bay Area News Group. As we continue to just get into all facets of the NBA offseason, the Warriors offseason, certainly a big part of that is Kevin Durant's decision to leave. That set a number of different things in motion, including the acquisition of D'Angelo Russell. Based on what you've reported, what you know, how much of D'Angelo Russell being on the Warriors' radar, how much of that was around as Kevin Durant was deciding where he was going to play? Or was this something that all just kind of came together once they found out what Durant was going to do, and then the fact that D'Angelo Russell would become available because of the cap space needed to be created for the Nets to acquire Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant?
Right. Well, this question falls under with the caveat of what I said before of, you know, you're humbled by you don't know what you don't know. But I'll take you through here. Leading up into free agency, when I was asking people on the Warriors, you know, what's the interest level in doing sign-in trades, they were maintaining the line of, we're not thinking about that thing and we're not considering it because the priority is to convince him to stay.
Right.
And they also want to keep cap flexibility, and they're not just going to keep – they're not just going to bring back players for the sake of bringing back players. It would have to be the right deal. But knowing philosophically how Joe Lacob and Bob Myers operate, they always say that they have all these contingency plans for A to Z. Because of that, it would be hard for me to believe not to think that they didn't have sign-and-trade thoughts – for the worst case scenario. So my hunch is they definitely had that as a fallback plan. And this is how free agency works. This is how coaching searches work. This is how the draft works. They have a board in their office, whether it's on a whiteboard, in internal databases. They have a ranking of guys that they want in free agency, guys they want in the draft based on their positioning, and guys they want for coaches in case that they wind up firing someone, or, you know, in Steve Kerr's situation, they don't plan on firing him, but he has a health situation.
You have a depth chart.
And they know, okay, what do I go to in that moment of crisis here? So there's no question that they had their eyes on possible sign-and-trade guys and how they ranked them. And D'Angelo had an all-star performance this year. He's a young guy, and I think that there's a thought of two things. A, they want to see how much he can continue to blossom. B, Klay Thompson's going to be out for at least half of next season, so they need some backcourt help. And three, and I think this is the larger point of why they made the sign-and-trade, they know that through the good or the bad of how he will be in a Warriors uniform, that they can get something in return for him. Does it get him another star? Does it get him a combination of good players? Does it get a combination of good players, draft picks, and some cap flexibility? Who knows? But because of how young and good of a talent D'Angelo is, there's an optimism that if nothing else, they can at least flip him.
How much, in your mind, of the Warriors looking at sign-and-trades after Durant decides to go hinged on Klay Thompson's injury? And I guess what I'm saying is if Klay Thompson's healthy and Kevin Durant decides to leave and go to Brooklyn as he did, do you think the Warriors at that point are thinking, well, we got the healthy core, let's bring Iguodala back and maybe try and go a different route in terms of free agency?
Yeah, I think that there would have been a very strong possibility that if Klay Thompson did not hurt his ACL and his left knee in game 6 against Toronto, that they would have thought that, you know what, let's bring it back, let's get Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson as a core together. Andre Iguodala is a good guy. I think they still would have waived Sean Livingston because he had been contemplating retirement. He was meeting the end of the road there. And then see what can you get at that mid-level at $5.7 million. Maybe resign DeMarcus or get a decent wing player that can at least offset the damage of Kevin Durant leaving. And then see what kind of decent guys you can get on the veterans minimum. What young guys can he develop? Retaining Kevon Looney, and I think there would have been, hey, they're good enough to make the playoffs, and then it's about having cap flexibility the following year, re-signing Draymond and going from there. But because of Klay being out, they want to set themselves up for two scenarios. A, they still want to give them a chance of entering the season being seen as a team that legitimately has a chance to make the playoffs.
And they needed firepower to do that.
Right.
And firepower that they wouldn't have been able to acquire if you look at the finances of what guys were getting paid. None of the guys that would have been probably the top 20 on the Warriors list were available at anything close to the mid-level, really.
Right.
And Colley Stein might be the only one that dipped down, that they would have maybe had some their eye on, that dipped down to a price range they could afford.
And even with how valuable Andre Iguodala is, there's a feeling within the organization that they had just done the conservative route that they would have struggled treading water without Clay there. And knowing that Andre's going to have to sit out certain chunks of the season because that's what he always did. But also prepare themselves for the worst-case scenario that maybe because of a combination of Steph and Draymond having some injuries that keeps them out for some games and some of these young guys not being quite ready for a big role and some of the free agent signings having an adjustment period, that they can quickly pivot to it's about rebuilding and developing guys and having flexibility for next summer. So they're not going to the season thinking tanking, but they're also going to the season of they want to set themselves up to be able to pivot to all those different scenarios that might unfold.
It's about creating options.
Yes.
It's really – and look, the Warriors are better equipped to make the playoffs with D'Angelo Russell than they would have been without D'Angelo Russell. And I think they were at a point where they didn't – they may have believed it, but they didn't know for sure when they decided they were going to go all in and attempt to make the trade for D'Angelo Russell. But they could see the way free agency was starting and the fact that some of the players that you either thought, like you said, were going to be mid-level guys or veteran minimum guys just weren't going to be available. And that also set them up to – because there are a lot of – look, Durant decides to go – what do you want to do? Do you want to take on Russell? If you take on Russell, it hard caps you. So taking on Russell means that not only is Durant now gone, but you take on Russell, and now Iguodala has to be gone just by virtue of the finances. You knew Livingston was probably gone anyway, and then you were looking at just a couple of minimum players to try and fill out the roster that may have been at the top of your list. So the Warriors had to do a lot of this analyzation on the fly. But I think all things considered, this goes back to those Yahoo grades we were talking about earlier. Making all these decisions on the fly and losing a player the level of Kevin Durant, giving them a D is pretty silly.
Yeah, I mean,
now a B or an A would mean that you think they've done a great job, and I don't think we know that they've done a great job. But to me, they're probably in that C range.
I don't think you can give them an A because they lost Kevin Durant, and you know they didn't. They didn't address the wing position. They have a lot of holes in the roster. But I think given the set of cards they had, they deserve a C, I think. C or a C plus.
Yeah, you clearly didn't fail. And you clearly didn't, you haven't enhanced your team. When you lose Kevin Durant, it's going to be hard to get better for that next one season. But they've given themselves an opportunity, which I think is critical. They've given themselves an opportunity to get back, as I've put it, in the championship business for the 2020-2021 season, even though at that point, if Draymond Green's still around to go with Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, they're going to be pushing toward the end of their prime, clearly, at that point in time. But maybe the talent level around them, this thing gets back to closer to a strength in numbers type of a scenario than it had been previously. All right, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. More of your phone calls coming up here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Mark Medina, Warriors This Week here on a Saturday, 95.7 The Game. And let's get to our first guest on the program. And it's a pleasure to be joined by one of the newest members of the Golden State Warriors, Glenn Robinson III. He joins us right now, right here on 95.7 The Game. Glenn, thanks a lot for joining us. We really appreciate it. How are you this Saturday?
Hey, no problem, guys. How you guys doing? I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're doing real well. Let's just start off. What made the Warriors appealing to you as you're looking at, you know, trying to continue your career and find a fit that suits your game?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, being a player from University of Michigan, coming out of college, learning to play that way in that style of play through B-line and really learning a system and playing, you know, organized basketball like we play. You know, and I also think the past, this will be year six for me, but the past 5 years just watching other guys and just learning from professionals, you know, and I think that I can really bring that to the team and along with my hard work. So, you know, I was excited when I got a call from the Warriors, and it's always been a dream spot for me to land there. And couldn't have asked for a better opportunity for me to just take advantage of.
Yeah, Mark and Glenn, how much is just the Warriors and everything that's been going on around them play into it? It's a scenario where obviously Kevin Durant was here. He's not. Andre Iguodala was here. He's not. And now we start looking at the small forward position, and there's a heck of an opportunity for somebody to come in and really contribute to this team.
Yeah. I think that I'm very excited about the opportunity. And I think that, you know, with a couple guys being gone, you always hate to see that, but it'll be a huge opportunity for me and, you know, a chance for me to really prove what I got, but more just a chance to fit into the system. And I talked to Coach Kerr, talked to a couple players, and I'm just excited to be joining the organization. You know, like I said, a first-class organization. Couldn't ask for a better spot to land.
Hey, Glenn, Mark Medina, I'm one of the Warriors beat guys for the Bay Area News Group. Congratulations with everything.
Oh, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, likewise. Glenn, you mentioned that Steve Kerr talked with you, some of the other guys. Who were some of those guys, and what was the takeaways that you took in your conversation with Steve Kerr and some of his players?
Yeah, so I met Damian Lee and actually met Spellman, a couple guys up at Summer League when I went before I signed recently in San Fran. But I think, you know, talking to Coach Kerr, it was huge for me to, you know, just get a chance to talk to him and just to get his feel on things, especially when you're going through the process of free agency. And, you know, when I got a chance to speak with him, you know, it really put my mind at ease, you know, just because, you know, last year being in this position and free agency, you know, sometimes things just doesn't go how you want them to go. You know, opportunities don't seem to be what they seem to be sometimes, you know. So talking to Coach, you know, it really put my mind at ease because, you know, like as you guys know, he's a first-class guy. You know, he treats his player with great respect, and that's how everybody in the organization seems to be. And that's really exciting just because you see why guys want to come here. You see why guys want to play for the Warriors, you know, just because of things like that. And, you know, just talking to him, you know, he just talked to me about opportunity will be there, you know, working hard and just continuing to learning the system and coming in and playing hard. It'll be there. So I'm just excited.
Yeah, Glenn, to your point about the opportunity, there's no question there's definitely going to be a lot of opportunity, but it's also going to be an interesting challenge. I mean, just knowing Kevin Durant's obvious resume, I mean, given the set of circumstances and what this team has with yourself and Alec Burks and Alphonso McKinney and maybe other options that Steve Kerr has at the wing position, what do you think it will take to be able to overcome the challenge of at least offsetting the obvious benefit of having Kevin Durant on your team and, you know, kind of the challenges that come with not having him anymore?
Yeah, obviously when you lose a superstar, you know, it's hard to make up for. But I think that if anyone had to do it, it would be, you know, a team like us, especially a coach like who Steve is, you know. And I think that now with me, Alphonso, like you said, Alec, you know, and a couple of guys at the wing spot, I think that he's excited. And I think that he'll be able to, just seeing the way that he does things and the way that he operates in the past, I think that I'm excited to see what he does because he's a very smart coach and he knows how to use his players to the best of their ability. You know, he's not a coach looking at what guys can and can't do, but how they can fit into the system and how they can help, how we can help each other, how he can help us. And that seems like what he's about. You know, when I talk to him, So like I said, I'm excited to adjust and, you know, get used to the system and things, and just working hard this summer to come in and prove myself. And I tell people all the time, you know, it never stops. You know, you never can stop working, because when I first came into the league, you know, you just go right back down at the bottom of the ladder. You climb yourself up, you know, and you continue to get better. So that's my main goal and my main job, and the focus in the summer is just to focus and get better every single summer, you know, and that's been my goal. And, you know, this will be year six for me. So I was talking to my dad, and he was like, man, you're doing something right. You know, this is year six, and keep it going and keep continuing to get better.
Glenn Robinson III joining us here on 95.7 The Game. And for those of you that don't know, Glenn Robinson III, the son of Glenn Robinson, the big dog, the number one overall pick in the 94 NBA draft of the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, you know, Glenn, the Warriors have the history of, you know, Steph's pops played in the league. Klay's pops was actually the number one pick back in the day as well, like your dad was. I mean, what's it like kind of growing up around the game and having, you know, somebody that's been through it all to kind of draw info and experience from?
Yeah, it's been really cool. You know, I think having the same name as my dad when I grew up, when I was younger, I wasn't a huge fan of that. You know, I often, you know, didn't like having the same name as my dad or didn't call it that, but as I got older, you know, it helped me. You know, it helped me in college when, you know, teams would look at me. It helps me now. You know, people remember his name and see my name. But the most important thing was just to create my own footsteps, you know, and I think that's what I always see, and that's what's consistent in players who have fathers who play in the league. And, you know, so, but it does help, you know, because he's done the traveling. He's, you know, had to deal with tickets. He's had to deal with families. He's had to deal with, you know, a lot of different things that we go through nowadays ourselves. So having someone to kind of bounce those ideas off of and talk to about a lot of things just makes it that much easier, you know, especially another pro who did this for 12 years. So it just helps me a lot to continue to learn, you know, because like I said, I just never want to stop learning.
Yeah, Glenn, and especially in today's NBA where, you know, 3-and-D guys are at such a premium, where do you think you're at this point in your career and your game when it comes to the shooting the three ball and also defending perimeter players?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm most excited about joining the organization is, you know, is getting a chance to prove myself what I can do on both sides of the floor and be that 3-and-D guy that we need. I was looking, you know, for that huge opportunity here when I was with Detroit. Last year, you know, unfortunately things didn't work out, but, you know, God has plans and, there's a, you know, even greater blessing down the line. You know, I was talking to my mom and I was like, who would have thought that, you know, I would be going to the Warriors. And, like I said, it's the perfect opportunity I feel like for me and, everything that I've been asking for to be able to prove myself. So, last year, you know, minutes were iffy, you know, a lot of things were up in the air, but that's how the league is, you know, and it takes one coach to believe in you, one opportunity, you know, and I think that just as long as you remain focused on what you can and stay grounded and stay working, it'll all work out, you know, but I think that 3-and-D is definitely my game. When I was here with the Pacers, I actually live in Indiana, still in the offseason, it's where I am right now, but when I was with the Pacers, you know, I guarded the best player on the court, you know, whenever they came on, and you know, I look forward to doing that this year too, especially with, you know, a defender like Klay out, you know, and guarding Paul George every single day in practice, you know, oftentimes sliding to the floor, guarding Blake. So I think I have a lot of versatility on the defensive end and being in the system and not too worried about my shot, you know, and just talking to the guys and talking to some of the assistant coaches and Steve, you know, they have no problem letting the ball go, you know, and no problem with confidence in their shooters, you know, so I'm just very excited.
Hey, Glenn, given just where the Warriors are at, where there's a lot of changes this offseason, right? I mean, Kevin Durant's gone. Klay Thompson's going to be out at least for the beginning of the season because of his knee injury. They're getting D'Angelo Russell, a lot of new faces, but at the same time, they still have Steph Curry and Draymond Green. Given all that, what's your sense of what Steve Kerr and the guys' expectations and what your expectations are for what you guys can accomplish as a team next season?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, we haven't all got together and talked, but every time you're going into the season, our expectations is to get better each and every day so that, you know, when we're looking at this thing and playoff time, we're sitting in a good position, you know, and And our goal is always to win a championship. Every team that I've been on, you know, when we go to training camp, that's the first thing we say, you know, and that's the first mission. And I think that that's where everyone's mindset should always be. But still having guys like Steph, who's a great player, and, you know, people seem to be, you know, not doubting him, but I think people, you know, forget how great he is, you know. And even though we lose a guy like KD and Clay's hurt a little bit, you have him coming out with a chip on his shoulder. Draymond, same thing, every night playing hard. You know, and then you got, you know, some young core and add pieces. And I feel like once we really get flowing and learning each other, and because you can't, sometimes you can't beat a system, you know, and sometimes you can't beat smart teams, you know. And I think that, you know, if we all come together on the same page, and that's why I'm excited, is just to be able to play on a system where I'm able to make reads, where I'm able to cut, use my athleticism, like I said, defend and shoot. I think that it'll be perfect for my mentality and my mindset and my game, and just excited to get going. And really, as soon as I found out that was the spot I landed, you know, I really got the chills, you know, because I felt like it would just be a great opportunity for me and my career. You know, like I said, because it takes one team to believe in you to really change your whole career, you know. And this is my sixth year in the league, and I've seen guys do that, you know. Look at Pascal from Toronto, you know, look at a couple different Fred VanVleet, you know, look at a couple different guys in the league, you know. And you always seem to see every year, you know, a couple of new names kind of pop up and spark a lot of attention. You know, I think that it's really opportunities like these that make that.
Glenn, we really appreciate the time, man. Thanks a lot for taking a few minutes out on a Saturday. And I got to tell you, you know, looking at your stats and bringing up your profile, it just as we knew you were going to be coming on, you got the best birthday, my man. January 8th is where it's at. That's my birthday as well.
Oh yeah, we share it with Elvis.
That's right. Elvis is the most famous, right?
Sounds like you guys might be celebrating in style next year.
No,
huh?
We'll have to catch up. I got you by a couple years, Glenn, but we'll have to catch up on that.
Yeah, we'll have to celebrate together. That'd be great.
All right, appreciate it, man.
I appreciate it. All the best to you.
Talk soon. Thank you, guys.
All right, Glenn Robinson III joining us here on 95.7 The Game. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Our thanks to Glenn Robinson.
Can I get a plus one, an invite to that party you guys are going to throw?
Absolutely.
Nice.
It should be a wild one, right?
Nice. What's it going to be, red carpet, VIP? I mean, what's the plan?
Well, the last few years, the Warriors have actually played in January.
They're going to play in honor of you. That's great.
So there's been games somewhere. One year, actually, it was in Sacramento. So that was actually kind of cool for me because I got to see some family around that weekend because the game was actually in Sacramento. But, yeah, I was looking at that. I'm thinking, yeah, all right. All right, Glenn Robinson III. I got him by a couple of years, though. He's January 8th. 1994.
Ooh.
So
yeah, you're a few years younger.
I got him by a few years there. But thanks. Appreciate him having him on the show. And there's going to be an opportunity for him. And it sounds like that was part of the appeal in joining the Warriors is the void at small forward.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, not to toot our own horn, but he hadn't talked since he agreed to a deal. So I think that was just a very, you know, informative interview of just kind of what his thought process is and what he's going to try to do to make an imprint on the team. And obviously, like, it's not about winning an interview or a press conference. You got to show what you can do on the court. But it just sounded like he knows what he's signing up for. He knows what they're asking of him, and he knows what the strengths and weaknesses are. And, you know, the theme that I got there is that he just sounds very enthusiastic and is eager to try to fit in with the Warriors culture and do the best they can to offset the question marks they have at that wing position. I mean, it's a losing proposition. You lose Kevin Durant. He's the best player in the NBA. It's not going to be successful replacing, but it's all about how do you minimize the damage. And it sounds like he and, you know, the Warriors, you know, have some ideas on what to take to try to make the best of that hand.
And the Warriors love wing players that can defend. I mean, anybody that can defend multiple positions, but they love three men that can defend fours. And I thought, you know, one of the things that stood out was, hey, guarding Paul George at practice, guarding Blake Griffin at practice. I mean, that's a valuable experience.
Yeah, that reminded me. I was talking to Kevon Looney one time last year about just his growth and his defense, and I was asking him, like, he was saying he had fun during the playoffs in 2018 guarding James Harden and LeBron James when he was put out on an island at the top of the key. I was like, how is that fun? He's like, you know what? Like, I was going up having to do that against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant in practice, that all of a sudden it didn't feel challenging. Like, no doubt it was a challenge, and he had his failures, but he also had his successes. But he didn't feel intimidated by that moment because that was such an everyday thing in practice, having to defend against all-stars.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Let's get to Bleacher Dave in Oakland. Hey, Bleacher Dave, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, good morning, you guys. What's happening?
Good morning.
Hey, I'm, you know, Steve Kerr, maybe rightly or wrongly, probably mostly wrongly, has been said, you know, anybody could have coached these prior editions of the Warriors. Clearly, he did a lot to maybe more manage them. Certainly, he put in his system. They ran certainly a lot of the defensive sets. They got his split cut principles, all that kind of stuff. But one of the things that maybe he's been criticized for is his ability to adapt his X's and O's along the way. Maybe most infamously, it took the video, former video coordinator, to come up with the adjustment for Memphis, you know, a couple days in. Some folks would say, and I'm probably one of them, that he reacts too slowly. Thinking about his challenge coming up this year to incorporate D'Angelo Russell with Steph and eventually Clay in what I'll presume to be a three-guard alignment, and the fact that you know, D'Angelo was the most prolific pick and roll user last year, which is not completely in keeping, you know, with the Warriors' offensive principles. You know, how much will D'Angelo need to adjust to the Warriors' offensive sets and run around off the ball like a madman? And how much would you anticipate the Warriors adjusting to an offense that he may fit more comfortably in? And how big a challenge does Steve have with his staff to put in a new system? And what's your assessment of this kind of demonstrated ability to do that in the past?
Thanks, Bleacher Dave. I mean, this is going to be a year where, I mean, the job description is going to be very different for Steve Kerr. More coaching. I mean, I don't know if it's more coaching. It's different coaching. And Steve's been as open as anybody about how great he's had it during his first 5 years in the league in terms of just overall talent and, you know, a group of guys that maybe needed a few slight tweaks here and there as opposed to an overhaul. Well, I think he knows and appreciates and is looking forward to the challenge of needing to not only maybe do more, but do things differently.
Yeah, and I mean, the sense I get with Steve is he's very self-aware, and I think because of his confidence about himself and also his humility is when he doesn't do a good job, he'll be the first to admit it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.